This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
Okay, so Divrei Torah for Seder night and for Pesach this year. So a few very interesting ideas that I'm looking forward to share with you. The first idea I saw in the Sefer of my brother-in-law, he's written the Sefer on the Haggadah by Jeremy Finn, and he quotes Rabbi Twersky an interesting observation. He says that tshuva and home renovations are very similar. Now, I will tell you an anecdote that I know of a friend of mine, which I think brings out the point that Rabbi Twersky makes very well. A friend of mine was born and brought up in Glasgow, Scotland. And he had a friend, a neighbor, who lived on this street who was not Jewish. And this fellow happened to win the national lottery. And he won many millions of pounds. And he was adamant that it was not going to change him. He was going to live in this very small terraced house in Glasgow. And he wasn't going to move. He wasn't going to be affected by the money. However, there was one indulgence that he would allow himself. And what was that? He always wanted a very wide television screen. And he went to the store and he bought himself a 42-inch plasma state-of-the-art screen. And he brought it home, put it in his living room, and he was using it, enjoying it for a few days. And after a few days, he just felt that this state-of-the-art, fantastically wide screen was totally inappropriate in this very small living room. He had threadbare carpet. He had a very old settee sitting there. It didn't look right. So he decided he's going to get rid of the settee and he's going to change it to a much fancier settee. And he did that. He brought it in, a nice new settee. But it didn't really go with the carpet because the carpet, like I said, was threadbare. So he needed to change that. And then the curtains. And now this fellow is living in a mansion somewhere in Scotland. The point is that tshuva, if you change one thing, then other things fall into place. So Twersky noted, for example, if a person is particular about making brachas, that he's very careful when he drinks, when he eats, he's going to make brachas with understanding, with care, think about the words, then hopefully that will have a positive effect. That after a while, he begins to realize how beneficial it is, how beautiful it is. So his action, maybe he'll focus more on his benching and he'll focus more on his tefillah. And then after he's enhanced his saying of brachas, his benching, his tefillah, he'll think to himself, how come this mouth, which has made such an effort to improve my brachas, my tefillah, my benching, speak Lashon Hara? So he'll then work on his Lashon Hara. He'll be careful not to speak Lashon Hara. He'll then think to himself, how can I ever put anything in my mouth which has any shaila of kashrus? And that enhances his kashrus. And eventually, it will ripple out to lots of different areas of halacha. That concept that tshuva and home renovations have a common denominator, that one aspect of our behavior is improved and it has a ripple effect in lots of other areas, is found in an interesting halacha regarding biur chometz. The Mechaber says, if you look at the first box, if you're listening online, please email me j.golker@gmail.com. The Mechaber says in Hilchos Pesach Simon Toflam Beis, "Bracha achas yochel livdeik kama batim." If a person owns a few houses, he doesn't have to make a new bracha of bedikas chometz in each house. He makes one bracha, and as the Mechaber says, "Bracha achas with one bracha yochel livdeik kama batim." Says with Aaron of Belz, the Belz Rebbe, the Holy Beis Belz Rebbe, the uncle and predecessor of the current Rebbe. One positive act of blessing, the bracha achas, yochel livdeik kama batim, that can be felt and have an effect in many places. So that is an allusion. This halacha is an allusion to this concept of tshuva and home renovations. The Belz Rebbe also says a very interesting idea. There is a Shulchan Aruch which says that a person, if he doesn't find any chomet, he says, "Im lo motzu chomet kashebodak yisreif hakli shelokach lebedika." You burn the kli which held the chometz that you were searching for. The Piskei Tshuva says over there that there is a minhag, which I think is very well known. Yeshnagin nisref hanoitza v'hakaf shel eitz v'shiuri haner. I today in the Post got a packet, I'm sure others here in London got the same packet, that it was a feather and a wooden spoon and a thin candle. And that is your bedikas chometz kit. It was part of a stocker campaign sent by some moset. So the minhag is that when you burn your chometz on for next Friday morning, Mitzvah Hashem, you burn the feather, you burn the wooden spoon, and that says the Pesach Ketubah is also, the minhag is, the Shurei Haner, the leftover candle, you burn that as well. I can understand why you burn the feather, it touched the chometz. I can understand why you burn the wooden spoon, also came into contact with the chometz. Why are you burning the candle? Says the Belzer Rebbe, a beautiful idea. Chometz on Pesach represents negativity, it represents gaiva, arrogance, it represents the Yetzer Hara. The purpose of the candle is to seek out and find that negativity. And something whose entire purpose is to seek out negativity, to zero in on that which is bad, doesn't deserve to exist. It needs to be got rid of. And therefore, the minhag is we burn the candle. You find the opposite with Aaron HaKohen. There's an interesting rash in the beginning of Parshas Baloisecha. The Parsha begins, Dabe el Aaron v'marto elov, v'haloisecho es haneros, when you, Aaron HaKohen, you need to light the candles, your iru shivas haneros, v'yas kein Aaron kasher tziva Hashem es Moshe. Says Rashi on the Pasuk, v'yas kein Aaron, lahagid shvachoi shel Aaron, to tell you the praise of Aaron HaKohen, shaloishino, he didn't deviate. It's a Rashi which people are troubled by. What exactly is the praise of Aaron HaKohen? Day in, day out, he lit the candles. He didn't loishino, he didn't deviate. He didn't change from what his instructions were. So the idea perhaps is this. Aaron HaKohen had many reasons to become embittered over the years. First of all, he was overlooked for leadership. His younger brother sort of took the position ahead of him. Number two, two of his sons died, a very tragic blow. Furthermore, he was caught up in the whole escapade of the Egel Hazav. He tried, of course, his delaying tactics, but ultimately he was involved, aided and abetted with the whole Egel Hazav. As a punishment, he was not able to go into Eretz Yisrael. He had reason to become bitter, but we know that Aaron HaKohen was an Oyev Shalom, a Roed of Shalom, and that perhaps is the Shrach of Aaron. By Yas Kein Aaron, day in, day out, even though he had reasons to become negative. But he remained positive, he didn't change, and he concentrated on the positive, and he spread the light. He lit and he spread that love and that warmth, and that perhaps is the shvach that Rashi refers to. And that really is the antithesis of the candle. The candle is there just to zero in on negative. We don't want that. We burn that with the chometz. Let's move on. There's a very interesting Targum. There are two mitzvahs on the night of Seder, which are min ha-Torah, bizman hazeh. One is achilas chometz, and one is sipur yitzias Mitzrayim, based on the posuk in the bottom box over there, v'higadata lebincha bayom ha-hu lemar, etc., etc. To tell the story. Says,
I think you mean achilas matzah.
Did I not say that?
You said achilas chometz.
Oh my gosh, yes, you don't want to do that on Seder night. Thank you for pointing that out. Achilas matzah is a mitzvah deraisa, and sipur yesias mitzrayim. Now, the targum on the words v'higadata lebincha is v'sechave libroch, v'sechave. That is not the normal word used to talk, to tell. V'sechave means to show. That's a very strange translation. What's the idea? The answer is that Chazal were educational experts way ahead of their time. You see, there's one thing telling someone something, and there's another thing doing it. And the second is so much more impactful. I'll give you an illustration. I may have shared this story with you before, but I think it brings out the point very, very well. So when my daughter was in Sem, she had the good fortune, you know, for Shabbos, they go to different places. So I remember she called on a Wednesday or Thursday. This Shabbos, she's very excited. She's going to the old city in Yerushalayim. She's staying, I'm sure many of you know her, with a lady who, Lily Gallandau, whose husband had passed away, and she remarried her cousin who in the old city of Yerushalayim. And we know her and whatever. Our daughter was going to stay there. So I said, she explained to me that this that Mrs. Gallandau is marrying someone from the old city. So I said to our daughter, I said, Ruchama, I said, do you know who this person is? This person is none other than Rav Nevinsal. Rav Nevinsal is one of the Gedolim. He's the Rav of the old city. He's a tremendous tzaddik. He's a big masmid. He finishes Shas twice a year. A Talmud Muvuk of Hashem is on Arbach. You're very fortunate. Anyway, Motzei Shabbos, I was very keen to speak to see how the Shabbos was with Rav Nevinsop. So she told me something remarkable. She said to me that they had the Suda, it was a winter. She had the Suda on Friday night. They had together with Friday night. And after the meal, it was 8:30, 9 o'clock, whatever time it was, the rabbi of Nevinsal and his rabbitson were tired. They wanted to go to bed. They were tired. They went off to bed. It was 9 o'clock. They left out some rogalach for their guests, for my daughter and her friends. And my daughter went down to the kotel. She davened with her friends and she came back. They were sitting there late at night having the rogalach, talking. At about 11:30 at night, the door of the bedroom opened and out walked Rav Nevinsal. For those who know him, he's got a tremendous hadras ponim. He came out and he was up for the day. He was up for the day. He had had 2 or 3 hours sleep. He was then now going to sit and learn until the next minyan, which takes place in his house I've been to. And he was up for the night to sit and learn for 5-6 hours before the next minyan. Now, I could tell my daughter about the importance of Hasmoda and Limud HaTorah, and it would make an impact, but nowhere near the impact that it would make when she sees Rav Nevinsal come out of his bedroom at 11:30 at night, having slept for the night, and now he's up to learn till Metzachamu. That is Pshat V'Higadita L'Bincha V'Sechavei Lebrach. On the night of Seder, there's lots of things that we do that we do it in an experiential way, in a sort of an immersive experience. That we're told, b'sha'at, we've got to say it, b'sha'at, sheyesh matzah u'mora menachim lefonecha. At a time when the matzah u'mora are placed in front of you. Because this enables our children, not just that we discuss these sort of abstract philosophical ideas, but we actually perform them as well. It's an evening where we're actually doing mitzvahs and we're talking about them and doing them. And therefore, that's really alluded to by the Targum, the Aramaic translation of the words, we demonstrate. We don't just preach, but we practice what we preach. Okay, let's move on. Manish Tano. The custom across all homes in Klal Yisrael is that the children ask the questions, and particularly the youngest child. I think the minhag in Klal Yisrael is that the youngest child has been prepped for this big moment for many weeks in kindergarten, has practiced and practiced the Manish Tano, stands on the chair on the big night and normally starts crying and gets too nervous to say it, a bit embarrassed, and needs to be bribed to say it. That's, I think, the minhag in many homes. But either way, it's the youngest child. Why the youngest child? So I heard last year a lovely explanation by Rabbi Malcolm Herman in the name of Rabbi Hull. Rabbi Hull here, who lives in Golders Green, formerly of Kingsbury, of course. He said a beautiful moshul. And a moshul, which I think is the Nimshal, is actually very, very important and goes to the very root of the night. This is the Moshe. In the jungle, they were going to have a competition to see who could make the loudest noise. So the elephant came along. He was first on, and he emitted a very loud bellow, and it went for 3 miles. They had people positioned 3 miles. The next animal came along was the hyena, and he let out a very shriek, raucous laugh, and that traveled for 4 miles. And then the king of the jungle, the lion, came along, and he gave a huge roar, and it was measured, it could be heard 8 miles away. And everyone thought that the lion had won the show. But then a little bird came along, and everyone laughed that this bird was going to compete with the lion. 8 miles. The bird started chirping, and a few hundred yards away, another bird heard it and also started chirping, and then chirped, and then a few hundred yards away, there was another bird, and then this sort of train carried on, these Chinese whispers, as it were, carried on for many, many miles, thousands of miles, way further than the 8 miles of the lion. The Nimshal is that in Yiddishkeit, we are not focused on the loudest noise, but we are focused on continued transmission, because ultimately that gets so much further. And that really is the point of Seder night. You see, the youngest child in the room, statistically, is going to be to live the longest and is going to pass the message on, therefore, the furthest. I remember a few years ago, and I've done this twice, and it was an idea that I must give credit to Rabbi Malcolm Herman as well, a good friend of mine. And he shared this idea, and he shared it many times, and it's a very important idea. And I did this a few years ago. Before Pesach, a day or two before Pesach, I told my children, I want them to cut out paper chain of men. You know, you've seen it, you know, you take some paper and you cut it in a certain way and you stick it together. And you had, I want a long chain of paper men, 120, holding hands, linked. They asked me why. I said, you'll see. Fine, they did it. Seder night that year, I remember it was a Baruch Hashem, all my siblings were there, my parents were there. It was a very special Seder, the first time in many, many years we were all together. And I told one of the children to stand in one end of the room, and they held one end of this paper chain. I stood on the other end, and it was a long paper chain stretching across the whole room. And I showed my children, I said, look, this first link in the chain is Moshe Rabbeinu. There were 26 generations before him. Avram to Noach is 10 generations. Noach to Avram is 10 generations. Avram to Moshe, 6 generations. Moshe Rabbeinu, this is Moshe Rabbeinu. Then there's Yeshua. Then I went through, you know, a sort of timeline of Jewish history, approximately. Here's David HaMelech. This is Rabbi Yehuda HaNossi. This is the Amoraim, the rabbis at the time of the Gemara. This is the Rashi. These are the Rishonim, etc., etc. And then we came to contemporary times. It turns out there are only approximately 120 generations from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu Matan Torah until now. 3,300 something years sounds like a long time. But in terms of generations, it's actually not that long. My children have sat at the Seder with their great-grandfather. That's 4 generations. If he knew his grandparents, perhaps great-grandparents, again, that takes you 7 generations. So 120 generations is not that long. The purpose of Seder night is to tell the story and to transmit that message that HaKadosh Baruch Hu intervened with nature, took us out of Mitzrayim, Goy Mekerev Goy. He created, formed Klal Yisrael in the Kur HaBarzel that was Mitzrayim. That was the very formation of the Jewish people. And he gave us Torah and and that is the message that we pass down the generations, every single generation. The famous Ramban at the end of Parshas Bo, that the message is so important that we repeat it on Seder night, that we write it on a piece of paper and we strap it to our Tefillin Shaliyah, our arms every morning, the Tefillin Shalrosh every night. We attach it to the doorpost and put on a mezuzah. And that's why the Isurim of Pesach are so strict. Eating chometz on Pesach is a chiyuv kares. Eating the matzah is a chiyuv, is a mitzvah sasei min haTorah. Because we're really, that is the purpose of the night, to transmit the message. And that is why the youngest, therefore, says the Manishtana. Because statistically, she will pass the message further. And it's not the loudest noise. The lion didn't win the competition. It's the continued, consistent transmission of the message, which is the focus of Seder night. Let's move on. Avodim Hayinu. One of the famous questions of Avodim Hayinu is that it really answers the question of Manish Tano. But what is difficult to understand is how. I remember as children at Seder night, we often asked the Manish Tano in Yiddish. And my father always began Avodim Hayinu. He said, he always introduced it, and the teretz is, and the answer is, Avodim Hayinu. But how does it answer the question? Manish Tano is 4 very specific questions. Why is it Shebechol HaLeilus on Oichlin Chometz U'Matzah, HaLeil HaZeh, and this night we're eating Kule Matzah? And 3 further questions. The answer is, Avodim Hayinu, we were slaves. How does that answer the question? So again, Rabbi Herman said a beautiful idea which answered this question. Rabbi Herman's late father was Dayan Herman. Maybe some of you remember him. Dayan Herman was a Dayan here in London. And in addition to being a Dayan, in his earlier years, he actually had a doctorate in philosophy. Now, when Rabbi Herman was a young teenager, he tried occasionally, he had some questions, some philosophical questions, and he tried to engage his father in philosophical debate. He asked him these questions. And his father consistently refused to engage in debate in philosophy with him. And he asked his father, why not? Why can't we discuss it? So his father told him a very succinct answer and a very important answer. His father said that when a friend when you have a relationship with someone, maybe it's a friend, maybe it's your spouse, and the relationship is a strong relationship, and it's built on trust, and it's built on long experience. If that other person in the relationship does something which raises eyebrows, which does something which is a bit unusual, you live with it. It's in the context of a relationship, and you overlook it. Well, so too, says Rav Nachman of Breslov, the purpose of Avodah Mayinu is to remind us that we have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Avodah Mayinu lefarav Mitzrayim, vayetziyanu Hashem elekeinu misham biyad chazak v'zunatua, etc., etc. He created that relationship. And therefore, when you have an ongoing relationship which is built on trust, there are no questions really. You overlook the questions. And that really is the answer to Manish Tana. The answer is, yes, this doesn't quite make sense. I don't really understand that. But at the end of the day, we're in a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is built on trust, which is long-lasting. And therefore, that is the best way to answer the questions, because I overlook some things which don't really make sense to me, because I understand, because of the context of the relationship, that there is a methodology, there is a master plan, which is built on the understanding of this, because of this relationship. Okay, one final idea, also a very beautiful idea. This I saw in the Rabbi Frantz Haggad in the name of Rabbi Yosha Ben Soloveitchik. Baruch HaMokum, a famous piece in the Haggadah, we refer, of course, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as HaMokum. Baruch HaMokum, Baruch Hu, etc. Why HaMokum? Why do we refer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as HaMokum? There's so many other names more common that we refer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu with. Why HaMokum? Soloveitchik quotes a Gemara in Chagiga. A Gemara in Chagiga contrasts two Nevi'im, two great Nevi'im, Yechezkel and Yeshaya. If you take a look at the bottom box, the penultimate box, sorry, Gemara in Chagiga, Yud Gimel on the base says, Omer Rava, Kol Shera'a Yechezkel Ro Yeshaya. Yechezkel and Yeshaya, two great Nevi'im, saw the same things, the Kisei HaKavod, the Maisei Merkavah, etc. Says the Gemara, Lema Yechezkel Daimer. What is Yechezkel compared to? Leben Kfar, to a villager. Sheroa es HaMelech, who saw the king. V'lema Yeshaya Doimim, what is Yeshaya HaNovi compared to? Leben Krach, to a city dweller, Sheroa es HaMelech. What does that mean? Rashi tells us, Yeshaya lived at the time when there was a Beis HaMikdash. He was like a city dweller, and as Rashi says, that Loichosh Lefarash is HaKol. That Rashi says that Yeshaya didn't need to express everything. He didn't need to explain it. Shehoya ben Melochim, he was like a prince who grew up in the royal palace. He had seen the palatial home, and therefore he wasn't dazzled by it. Yechezkel, on the other hand, he was living in Bavel. He was living not in the time of a Beis HaMikdash, and therefore when he saw these amazing sights, he was excited about it, he was dazzled by it, and therefore his description is much more in detail and much more sort of excitable language. My friend gives a mosh. Imagine someone lives in Washington, D.C., and he lives perhaps very nearby the White House, and he often sees the presidential motorcade go past. It's not an unusual sight for him. He doesn't get so excited about it. He's not going to call home and tell everyone about it because it's, you know, Meissen Bacholio. If, however, someone from the villages, the example Rabbi Franz gives is someone from Pocatello in Idaho, wherever that is, middle of nowhere. He happens to come to Washington and he's sort of sees all the bright lights of the big city. And then he goes to see the White House. And then at that moment, the beast, right, the big presidential motorcade comes out, the guy is so excited. He takes photos and selfies and he's calling everyone, he's talking about it for the next 2 months. What's the difference? The difference is, for him, this is exciting news. This is very unusual, very strange. The interesting thing is, in the Kedusha that we say in Shemoneh Esrei, in the Chazor HaSashatz, we make reference to Nevuahs of both Yechezkel and Yeshaya. We say, Kodesh, 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 Hashem Tzavakos, Malei Chol Ha'aretz Kavodim. That's a pasuk in Yeshaya. That the whole world is filled with the glory of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The next line in Kedusha is, Baruch Kavod Hashem Mim Koymai, the pasuk in Yechezkel. Why does Yechezkel refer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mim Koymai? Hamokam is used whenever we cannot see Hashem's presence clearly. For example, the most famous example, of course, is when we never go to a shiva house. The wording we say is Hamokam Yenachem Eschem. Why Hamokam? Because we console the mourner, we give him nechama, that even in dark times, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is still there. When we say Baruch Hamokam on Seder night, we are giving acknowledgement that after 2,000 years of Golus, that we're still sitting having Seder without a Korban Pesach, we remind ourselves that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there, he may be a little bit hidden, his presence is not so clear, but he has not abandoned us. And we dafka refer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the guise of Baruch Hamokim. We think about it, you know, it's 2,000 years we've been in Golus. Seder night is a very special night. But it's a far cry from what it should be. What it should be is that we should be in Yerushalayim or HaKodesh. We should bring our Korban Pesach to the Beis HaMikdash on the busiest day of the Beis HaMikdash's year, Erev Pesach. And we bring the Korban back and we eat it that night. We see the Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash. We see the Leviim singing. We see the majesty of the whole event. It's a far cry to what it should be. And we understand that life is not always so clear to understand. And we therefore refer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as Hamokam, because that is always the name we give him in instances where you cannot see Hashem's presence so clearly. Okay, let's just summarize quickly the five ideas that we've shared this evening. The first is on Bir Chometz, that insight of Rabbi Twersky, that tshuva and home renovations, that tshuva is like buying the new settee. You buy the new settee, it doesn't quite fit in, you've got to improve that, you've got to change the lights, you've got to change the curtains, and before you know it, the whole house looks wonderful. Well, so too, you focus on one thing, you focus on brachas, that improves your tefillah, that improves your benching, that improves your lashon hara, that improves your kashrus, Shabbos, who knows where it goes. That's the idea. And that is alluded to in the Shulchan Aruch, which says, the bracha achas yochol livdei kama batim. Through one bracha, you can fix and you can fill that bracha, and has an effect in many, many places. Why burn the candle? I can understand the spoon and the feather, but why burn the candle? The Teretz is the candle is used to seek out negativity. If there's something which his sole purpose is used to zero in and find something which is negative, that doesn't deserve to exist, and we burn it with the chometz. The antithesis of that, of course, is Aron HaKohen. Even though he had reason to be negative, lo shinna means lo shinna that he remained positive, and he continued to yo'iru shivas ha'meiros, and to spread that light and that warmth. Say the night, v'yigadta l'bincha, the mitzvah sase of Sipurus Yisrael, the Targum translates as v'sechave, we show. The idea is that in Yiddishkeit, we don't just preach, but we practice what we preach. And this is really emphasized on the night of Seder, because there's so much action, there's so much happening. The Manish Tana, why is it the youngest child? So that's the moshel of Diane Herman, of the lion in the jungle. That it's not the making the most noise that counts, but rather it's the consistent transmission of the message. That's what Seder night is all about. It's the consistent transmission after dozens and dozens of generations, the Baruch Hashem, we continue to tell the story to the next generation. That is such a strong emphasis of Seder night. And ultimately, the youngest child, statistically, will be the one to pass the message the furthest, because we focus on that transmission rather than making the most noise. Avodim Ayinu, how does it answer the question? The answer is, says Reb Nachman, that Avodim Ayinu tells us that we are in a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When you're in a relationship which is based on trust, then you can overlook some of the questions. We understand that there is a rationale, there is a methodology, there is a master plan, and that ultimately is the answer to all the questions. And lastly, why Baruch Hamokam? Why do we refer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as that? The answer is because Hamokam is the language we use to describe HaKadosh Baruch Hu in situations where his presence is not so clear. That's why Yechezkel, like we said, he was writing in Bava. He was not there sitting in the Beis HaMikdash. So he uses this sort of excited, dazzled language because he is like a Ben Kfar, according to the Moran Chagiga, a villager who's seeing all these magnificent sights of the Maisei Merkava, of the Kisei HaKavod, etc. And he's dazzled by it. And therefore, he uses these excitable expressions. But he uses that expression, Baruch Kavod Hashem Im Koima. He describes HaKadosh Baruch Hu Im Koima, because that is the language used when we don't see Hashem's presence so clearly. That's the lashon we use when we menachem avol, hamok mirachem eshchem. Even in dark times, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is still there. And that is what we're referring to as Seder night. Baruch HaMokom, after 2,000 years of Golus, that we're sitting Seder night without a Korban Pesach, but yet we sort of hope that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is very much in our lives, His presence is there, and He has not abandoned us. But amidst Hashem, there's still time, that please God, we should be zocher to eat the Korban Pesach in Yerushalayim. And thank you all for listening.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.